Welcome into DC On Screen, episode 324. We are getting super spoilery on Supergirl, Mr. and Mrs. Mixie Spitalick. I'm your host, David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hello.
To recap, Mr. Mixie Spitalick is out to get him a Supergirl. He comes bearing promises of showing her the world, but she's not into it. Mon-El, who has seen fifth-dimensional beings before, is feeling a little more hostile about his intrusion. Supergirl swears that she could take care of the little imp, but Mon-El steals some fifth-dimensional tech to challenge Mixie on his own. He fails, and Kara swears that she and Mon-El are fundamentally wrong for each other. She don't like failure. She also agrees to marry Mixie, but only if it's done at the Fortress of Solitude. When Mixie arrives, she explains that she will never marry him, and has set off a bomb that will destroy them both. He pleads that the world needs Supergirl, and she reluctantly agrees to let him disarm the bomb, which is a ploy to get him to spell his name backwards, which banishes him back to the fifth dimension. Elsewhere, Wynn has found a feisty woman from Starhaven to take a chance with, and Maggie overcomes her Valentine's drama to make a special moment for Alex. And finally, a humble Mon-El admits he was wrong, and Kara admits she was lying about whether they could be together. Then they appear to get very together. So, yeah, they...
The show let her kiss somebody! Woo!
I know, I was about to say, you were wrong. You were wrong about
I was so happy that. For her. But now, yeah. Then it looked weird then. Like her mom took a wow moment. I was like, okay, they're going for it. All right.
Yeah, it's a little bit like watching your little sister make out. It's like,
it felt like that. Like, I was glad that I was kind of glad the show was over. I didn't feel like I should be watching that.
Yeah, it was gross.
Yeah. Cooties. Can I tell you my favorite little moment from this episode?
Well, what's that, man?
Supergirl just drinking OJ like a gangsta. I don't know why that moment made me laugh so much, but it's like the one. It's a funny little line early on. Like, I can't make you do this. Can't make you do this. Can't make you drink orange juice for some reason. So they just drop it, and then like she comes back to the fortress, and she's just like staring him down, drinking orange juice. Like, yep, I can do it. Can't make me though. I don't know. The moment was really good for me.
Yeah, I saw her with the orange juice and went, that's a callback. I know you said something about orange juice earlier, but I forgot what it was.
Well, I laughed at the orange juice line earlier, and then, I just thought it was a weird little throwaway, and then the stare down with it was, that was a good payoff. It was well done. Yeah. Well done for me.
Of all things that they decided could be a Chekhov's gun in this episode, it was the orange juice.
Yeah. Why not, man?
I don't know.
I had even written it down because I just thought it was funny. Like, go figure.
Yeah. No. I thought it was weird that they got, they're the competition. Disney pretty much owns Marvel now, but he's still singing Aladdin songs.
I know. I thought it was a cool genie nod, though.
It was. It was a nice nod.
It was.
Though from this writing group, I would expect more of a Q reference, but whatever.
You know. I still think you got a Star Trek reference in Lyra's makeup. Is it Romulan that I'm thinking of? She looks very familiar.
She looks like something from Star Trek. Actually, she looks more like Darla from Buffy, if you ask me.
Maybe, yeah. not as much like eyebrow furrow, but...
Yeah. Okay, so one of my favorite things was when Mixie turns the guns around and says he saw this in a movie. I'm pretty sure he was talking about X-Men. And then Supergirl saves the criminals, and the one criminal goes, "Thank you, Supergirl," and she just like cracks him in the head.
That was good. I actually thought Mixie I'm just going to say Mixie. Just I'm not going to bother with the rest of it. Was pretty damn charming, actually. Kind of liked him.
Mm-hmm. He was funny.
He was funny.
He was fun.
Like the whole like Hamilton Burr thing, pretty good. Mm-hmm. There's like a scene that I'll always wish I. It's almost up there with that like what they call it, like dragon soccer or whatever the other day. he says like. The Daxamites have experienced fifth dimensionals before, and Mon-El just says like those guys don't know how to party, but and man, don't you want to see what a party just full of fifth dimensionals looks like?
In my head, I would assume that it would be so outlandish that human beings couldn't.
I would
actually
just
fathom
literally
it.
Imagine I couldn't like physically picture it. I would get in there and like my brain would rejigger it into like a tame tea party or something just so I wouldn't lose my sanity completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Get in there and like there's like giraffes made of rainbows and shit. Yeah.
You remember the what was that bit on? There was a cartoon back in the 90s, Tiny Toons.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the
Family down the hole.
What was the dodo? Was that what his name was? I don't remember. He was like that weird bird that lived in. He had like an umbrella on his head, and he lived in that crazy world.
You don't remember it that well. I remember really liking the show, but at this point, it's like the down the hole bit is all I remember.
Yeah. Anyway.
So it's another great little send up with Mon-El. He says like, well, he mentions the like saying the name backwards thing, and she says like, well, why didn't you tell me about that? He says, I didn't tell you because it never works.
Yeah,
that's a nice nod to just how silly a gimmick this is for fifth dimensionals.
Yeah. Speaking of Mon-El, things were easier on Daxam when I objectified women and didn't care about anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that.
Well done. He actually got a couple of good moments. Like Kara's saying she's going to marry him. She's going to marry Mixie and all that. And she gives him the heave-ho speech. And, we're going to be able to do so much good together. We'll make a great team. And it goes back to Mon-El just saying, I thought we were going to do that. I felt for him. I felt for him, man.
I didn't fall for her ruse.
I didn't know so much fall for the ruse, but I sure as hell fell for the... I didn't realize how much I was shipping Mon-El and Kara until I like saw the hurt in his eyes there. Oh, he really cares.
Okay. I mean, all this is going to blow up when it turns out he's the prince and he's being tracked. So.
Oh, yeah, it's going to burn hard, but, you know, fun while it lasts.
I loved Wynn telling Mon-El, we look with our eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of...
Well, you got to see Parasite again, by the way.
Eh.
Oh.
That thing looks gross. I don't want to keep seeing that.
It's Parasite. He's always going to look gross.
Every time that thing comes out of his mouth, I'm like, eh.
Like, unless Bruce Timm draws him, he just looks terrible.
Right. Bruce Timm actually did the opposite. He just kind of covered up his mouth.
Yeah. He was just, like, yeah. He was a Ken doll.
Yeah. I thought the idea of Mixie turning the giant drill statue into a foe for Kara was interesting and fun.
It was cool.
Now, what's annoying is she's like, sorry, uncle. I'm like, shut up. You know it's not him.
You know, there's moments like that where, like, I can kind of get along with that kind of patter because I could see myself thinking something like that around the time.
Uh-huh.
I could see myself personifying this statue just briefly before I punched it.
Yeah, but you would do it in a funny way.
No, I would do it internally. Like, I know I would be thinking, like, oh, sorry, uncle.
Right.
I don't know if there's a way to be funny out loud about certain things. So, but, you know, that's the important value of knowing when to open and shut your mouth.
Mm-hmm. I never learned that lesson. That's why I have a podcast.
That's why we're here, basically. We have no idea how that works.
So this episode was written by Jessica Queller and Sterling Gates. Sterling Gates being a comic book writer, DC Comics comic book writer for Adventures of Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always happy when they bring people over.
Yeah, he had some real cred there. He wrote for a few years, as far as I know.
Always happy with that. So, a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
How open are aliens in National City, in the world, in this Earth 38 or whatever it is? Because it seemed like, hey, we're going to have a bar because this is where we can all openly be ourselves. And now we've got an alien going out.
Yeah, they're official.
Eating with Wynn.
They're official.
Yeah.
I mean, that was especially like, remember the White Martian episodes?
Yeah.
And then the Alien Registration Act passed, as far as I know. Now, we still don't know why Linda Carter's character on the show flashed her eyes red. I don't know what the deal is with the... with the Alien Registration Act. Surely that's like a thread we're going to pick up later.
Maybe.
Maybe Terry Hatcher and Hercules will come show us. I don't know. But it is established. Like, they're out there at varying levels of being out there, I guess. Like, some people are more or less comfortable with it, but they're out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, he said something about, like, they're like, oh, they're staring. He's like, let them stare. Who cares? And I'm like, I didn't see anybody staring.
Yeah, they never actually show you people staring. Like, it's weird. It's a thing, though, that I've seen several times in TV and movies. Just...
Yeah.
They don't actually glance around. It's like they don't want to bother casting anyone to glance around. They can just throw a line in. You'll believe it.
That's some kind of crap I would pull.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't have money to show people actually being derivative. Just say it. All right.
All right. And this is something that Bethany brought up about this episode. My girlfriend Bethany, she brought it up to me, and I hadn't seen it yet. And then I saw it, and I was like, yeah, that's weird. So... here's my justification. Alex and Maggie are crazy.
What was...
And have a serious death wish and or, you know, thrill seeking issue. I mean, they're both in law enforcement, incredibly dangerous jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it stands to reason that they just leave their fireplace burning all the damn time.
Ah, yes.
It's like they come home, fire's burning, then they leave with the fire burning. Then the other one comes home with the fire burning.
It's also a major issue here is they both live in apartments.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that is just, that's almost criminally negligent at that point, right?
Yeah.
She's right now that you mention it, but yeah, some downright dangerous behavior. Risking the lives of the rest of their building just so they can come home to a fire. Ridiculous people.
Like, Alex, Maggie, what are you doing? Supergirl will save them.
Yeah. That's fine. What are you doing this weekend? Base jumping? Why? I told Carl it'll be fine.
You gonna leave the fire burning in your apartment the whole time?
Oh, hell yeah.
Probably.
Arctic breath, biatch.
I mean, I know it's one of those television conceits, you know, like when people pick up the phone, they're like, blah, 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 and then they just hang up. They don't even say bye to each other.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
In real life, if you try that, and you're like, all right, I'll be there in about 15 minutes, and you just hang up.
It feels rude.
I mean, you and me, we're fine. Yeah. But...
Well, I've tried it. I just experimentally, I have actually tried it, and it feels weird. Like, I had the feeling that I should pick up the phone, call someone back, and say, hey, I meant to say bye, bye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just feels unnatural.
Like, I've tried it, and people are like, why did you hang up on me? Or did your phone just cut out? And I'm like, no, we were done talking.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's not okay.
It is, though. It's some people are like this, though. It's legitimate. I do actually know a couple people that, like, when the content section of the phone call is over, I'll go to say something, and they're not there. They're not there anymore. So it's precedented.
I know it's precedented. It's just that those people are going to die alone.
Say bye like a human.
All right. I think that's it for this episode. What do you think, man?
No. I had two more things. Ready?
Oh, okay.
I really liked the concept from John on some planets to write something down is to truly say it.
I did like that.
I really liked that concept. That was touching. Also liked the little bit about you can't force love. You have to let it find you. Just good advice, I thought. But were you really going to let me get out of here without mentioning the you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did write that down.
Because,
I just couldn't read it because I scribbled it. I was like, I don't know what that was.
Oh, that's what that is. Now, man, we got some Keaton in this thing.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that, though.
That was a pretty good laugh. Pretty good laugh from me. I appreciated that little send-up.
That was weird.
That's all I had, though.
Somebody on that staff really likes the 89 Batman movie.
I know.
We've talked about how they have Ever Danced with the Devil in the pale moonlight off camera.
No, it's not off camera anymore. Remember they when they evacuated?
Yeah, it has shown up.
Yeah, when they evacuated, it showed up officially. So there are now two official lines from that movie in this series. I do. I have to believe that movie exists in this reality on Earth 38.
No. I don't think so. I don't think the movie exists.
Nah.
It's other realities. Like, you remember the bit from DC Comics. Where it was like the JSA actually existed in the JLA's timeline. It was just, or they were a comic book.
Yeah.
And whoever wrote them was inspired by another Earth. Yeah.
Barry used to like read about Jay Garrick. And...
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
I'm just saying that I think Michael Keaton's Batman was a movie that happened somewhere in Earth 38.
I don't.
And there we leave it.
They talk about Gotham City in this universe.
That's the other thing is like, why don't they? I mean, if you have actual heroes out there, there's no reason you can't have, you know, movies about those heroes. It's not like Batman's going to call you on copyright infringement.
Yeah, but no one knew that Bruce Wayne was Batman.
See, that's where I would imagine you just kind of like pick a name. I'm not going to tell you that it's exactly the same. It's probably like they picked the random asshole's name for the, like, I don't know, it's like John Gilbert as Batman or something. Mm-hmm. But.
Now, I'm not saying that it's unprecedented for it to be a movie. Oh, and that might be interesting. We know that it was a movie in The Flash, the 90s Flash series.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see Barry walk by the movie theater.
The giant movie theater, yeah.
And so, I mean, if that is Earth 38.
that's where you have the Flash 90s series happening now?
I mean, you know, I don't think so, but we know it at least exists as a movie in the multiverse.
It's somewhere out there. I'm not saying all the details are the same, but the content is basically there. I think there's a Batman movie involving those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that useless debate aside, I think I'm pretty much done here.
It's not a useless debate. We've seen John Wesley Shipp's Flash in the time stream, mm-hmm. in the vibe vortex, or whatever you want to call it. So I don't think it's useless. That's what these people have done. You can you know, rail on them for being cheesy if you want. Sometimes they are. But man, they made this a viable argument.
Yeah.
All right.
Fair enough.
Guys, we are DC On Screen. You can check out every episode at DCOnScreen.com. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. Come talk to us on Twitter, Facebook, those things. We're going to be coming right back with a review of Attack on Gorilla City, Flash 313.
Part 1.
Until next time, guys, keep some DC on your screen.